Welcome to the Northern Business Podcast, a regular discussion with people in the north of England who lead businesses, employ people, and who have new ideas to help our economy grow. In the studio today with Martin McTagoby, he's the chair nationally at the Federation of Small Businesses. And down the line, we're joined by retail expert Graham Soult. Now, the Northern Business Podcast is produced by Recognition PR. We serve scores of companies in different sectors across the country. And we're kindly sponsored today by Virtue Motors, one of the UK's top automotive retailers with a network of dealerships working with some of the world's most popular brands. It also owns the commercial vehicle retailer Vans Direct. I'm Graham Robb, and co-presenting with me today is Joss Haverkin. Well, Joss, what a week. It's been in business.
It has, and can I just say it's very nice to be on the sofa. Some of the people who've watched this for a while will have seen me up in the studio here and out in the field speaking to people, but I've made it the big time.
Yeah, absolutely. Quite right. Next week, actually, you and one of our colleagues is presenting it entirely from the NOF conference.
That's right,
Which is about the supply chain for energy, and you're going to be live there. So
if there's anybody watching who's going to be at the conference, come and find Jamie and I and tell us what you've got going on. Should be great.
I've been out and about this week. I was at the NET Festival, which was in the northeast of England. Lots of small businesses there. Martin, I was very interested by what they had to say about the economy. Mm-hmm. And then tomorrow I'm at a business club event where I'm chairing a meeting with the Bank of England agent in one of the areas of the north. And later, the Entrepreneurs Forum presenting some awards. Well, what have you been up to?
Well, I've been working on some really interesting case studies this week for a business coach who's a client of ours, including a woman from Lithuania who came over with just a few hundred quid in her pocket. She's built up a guest house, a small business, but now she's taking her experience, she's passing it on. She's becoming a business coach herself. And like you, I'm going to be out tomorrow. I'm heading off to an event run by an accountancy firm and a solicitor's firm. We're looking at the new employment law changes, which I'm sure you might have something to say about in a little bit, Martin.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just felt when I was talking to the smaller businesses yesterday at the conference, the common denominator was enthusiasm. There's a lot of enthusiasm among the entrepreneurial part of our smaller micro business community, but fear as well. Fear about the economy, fear about the employment law changes. And Martin, I sensed, and these were your members, I know, because you had a stand at this conference, which was very well attended. I talked, for example, to someone in recruitment, and she was recruiting in all sectors across the economy, a generalist. And she said, look, the vacancies aren't there like they were.
Yeah. No, it's a very tight labour market. And I think judging the mood that you were describing, I think they've gone from a situation where under the previous administration, I think they were very nervous because it seemed rather chaotic. Mm-hmm. And, the decisions weren't made in a very clear way, to one where I think they feel it's a more stable political environment, because it's a big majority, but they don't know what they're going to do. Mm. So that nervousness still continues. And I don't think that will be resolved until after the budget.
I know in our own small business at Recognition PR, we've got a lot of businesses that we're doing work for, and we're busy, but we've noticed some out, some in. We've won some really good contracts, but we've lost some.
Yeah.
And it's sort of been churn. And I always know in, 37 years of doing this, churn is the great frustration in life.
Yeah, I know. And it's a very common response we get to a lot of the surveys we do. We had a little uptick in confidence just before the election, but it's now declined again. And I don't think we're going to resolve that until this budget's out of the way. I think the budget's the key thing, but employment regulations are also a bit of a cloud on the horizon.
Now, I'm just going to hold that up because it shows that the FSB is very active in talking to decision makers. That is your manifesto for small businesses and the self-employed that you presented just before the general election. So it should come as no surprise to decision makers what the FSB thinks. But you've managed to meet with some of the ministers. What kind of tone of voice are you getting from them, and what kind of things are they saying to you?
I think they're trying to reassure us. There are, I think we've learned over the years that if you have a very long shopping list of requirements, that the chances are they pick off the easy ones first. So we've had three very clear requirements. Number one on that list was late payment or poor payment practices. Me personally, I've been banging on about this for about 10 years. I'm in danger of boring myself. I've spoken about it that much. But there is, it represents the concerns of probably virtually every business I come across. Certainly 8 out of 10 have suffered from some form of late payment. It doubles the amount of working capital they've got to keep in the business. And last year, I think we recorded something like 50,000 businesses that were driven out of existence because of poor payment.
I know, and I won't name names, but an anecdote which I'm sure you'll be familiar with. I was talking to a large firm, and I said, "How's business?" "Oh, don't worry." They said, "We were talking to our major accountancy practice," which was one of the largest accountancy practices, and they said, "We should just unilaterally extend our payment terms to our supply chain and we won't have a credit problem." In other words, use the supply chain as a bank.
Yeah, and this is happening consistently. But if you think about it from the government's perspective, they've come into power saying that they want to grow the economy. They have, you know, we know from history that the economy has never grown successfully without small businesses being at the heart of it. And that means that they've got to have the resources to be able to grow. That's either to recruit people, invest in new plant and equipment or new sites. That is impossible if larger businesses are constantly draining those small businesses in their supply chain and effectively borrowing money from their supply chain when they know they can perfectly well afford to have that cash themselves and they can get it a lot cheaper than their suppliers can.
Well, it's interesting you say that, Martin. A few months ago, Graham and I were involved in an event with Liz Barclay, who's the Small Business Commissioner.
Yeah.
She was saying it's 20% of businesses, right, or small businesses, the ones that you represent, are experiencing cash flow problems as a result of late payments.
Yeah.
And the thing that I really took away, which I found quite shocking, you're talking about wanting to grow the economy, it's been held back by late payments. Mm-hmm. £2.5 billion, she said last year, was trapped up in that. And you would think that £2.5 billion is going to get, you know, some things moving, certainly. And obviously,
it's nearly a penny of income tax.
Yeah,
well,
it's not a small amount.
It's a major thing, you know. And I think we've convinced them. They've made the announcement last week. There are some significant changes. I mean, the first thing is the prompt payment code has essentially been ripped up.
Yeah.
It has been abused for years.
Yeah.
It hasn't really been effective. They're also have finally accepted our argument that you need transparency here. Some very slippery big businesses hide behind bogus figures.
Yep.
They pretend they're paying people on time, but they're not. So now what we're saying is they've got to publish their payment practices in their annual report. Now that means, you know, organizations like FSB and Recognition PR can hold them to account. They can say, look, you clearly have a poor record, and we want you to improve that because, as far as small businesses are concerned, they're the only way we're going to grow the economy and they are essential for a lot of communities.
Let's bring Graham Sult in because he's nodding vigorously at everything you're saying here, Martin. We're going to talk about retail in a minute, but what's your experience of what Martin's saying?
I think it's true. I think plenty of businesses do struggle with that issue of sending out their invoices and then having to wait ages for payment. Certainly in my certainly in my own experience, it tends to be the big companies who are the worst culprits. Those other small businesses tend to pay promptly, but it's the big and public sector organizations that I've always had the worst experiences with, unfortunately.
Now, I just to round this topic off, Martin, Josh was talking about the Small Business Commissioner. She's a lovely woman and she really is a good advocate, small business. But she, as you say, she doesn't have the teeth. It's a prompt payment code. It's not a prompt payment law.
Mm.
And sure, like many businesses, I am seeing quite a few firms pass on the pain down the line as a small supplier.
Yeah. what does FSB think would be the actual regulatory change that would make the difference? You sort of about publishing and naming and shaming if they get it wrong. But what about any kind of enforcement rule?
Well, I think the first role is to try and make sure that the public are aware of the villains of the piece, right? So if that fails to change their behaviour, then I think they should be prevented from bidding for public contracts. And if that isn't enough of an incentive, then I think Liz Barclay or whoever succeeds her should have the power to investigate and, if necessary, fine these companies that are behaving in such an antisocial way.
Yes, a sanction that doesn't mean going through a county court. And
no.
Because people don't want to go through county court because you end up tarnishing your own reputation as a supplier.
Well, Liz knows from experience that she can't persuade people to complain about their major customers for obvious reasons, right? So I think if Liz gets plenty of information about poor payment practices, she can then go information, she can go and investigate particular companies. Okay. We know there are some really poor companies. They can't expect their supply chain to complain about them, but given the right evidence, they should be able to investigate.
Excellent. Josh, let's pick up with Graham.
Sorry.
So, Graham Sewell, retail expert. You and I live in Darlington. There's been big news in Darlington, hasn't there?
Yes, there has been. The bin store, for those who don't live in Darlington, I think, Martin, you might, you'll know this.
I do.
It's a House of Fraser representation here. And, Graham, you had a piece that was published in the Northern Echo that you think that the high street, even without the likes of department stores like Bins and House of Fraser, has still got a future. I wonder whether, for the people who've maybe missed it, you could tell us a little bit as to why you think that's the case.
Well,
Darlington.
Sorry.
Darlington is somewhere that I visit regularly. So I'm a big fan of Darlington. I think it's got a really good offer. And that is actually driven by the independent. So it's got a really good independent retail hospitality offer. And I think the House of Fraser thing, it's not a big surprise, as I wrote in my article, because actually it was due to close even before Sports Direct bought it 6 years ago. So in a sense, we've had 6 years to think about what happens if this big store goes. And I think, as you know, I visit lots of towns and cities all over the country, and you know, the scale of things, Darlington has got a lot going for it. I think if you take away those big names, yes, of course, it's a blow, but it's not the scale of loss that you see in some other places where they haven't got that kind of wider, richer community of independents as well. So I made that point in my Northern Echo column, because I can rely on others to pebble all the depth of the high street messages. And I wanted to use my platform to say, actually, if only you look, Darlington is worth visiting. There's lots of good stuff happening with the Treasury and the celebrations for the Stockton Darlington Railway next year. It's a really nice town. And I think there's lots of scope to see this building repurposed in a productive way.
Now, we're the Northern Business Podcast, so let's extend some of these learnings from the town of Darlington, which is a provincial town with about 100,000 people. And there are many of towns like that across the north of England. And you've got a major chain like House of Fraser now eliminated from vast tracts of the north. And it doesn't just apply to House of Fraser. There is a change in big retail when it comes to department stores.
No, you're absolutely right. And if you look at those big department stores, Debenhams, John Lewis, even Marks and Spencer, you know, a lot of those names have gone from a lot of places. It's really only Newcastle in the northeast that still has them. So I think all places are having to adapt, both in terms of what they offer and also in terms of filling these big spaces. And what we're seeing all over the country, really, is a lot of quite interesting mixed uses coming in. So in many cases, all department stores do lend themselves to a range of uses. You might still have retail or hospitality on the ground floor, but on the upper floors, you might have housing or hotels. Elsewhere in the country, you've got buildings that are being repurposed, even by universities. So there's lots of ways in which you can preserve these buildings, hang on to those memories and those positive feelings that people have about the importance of those buildings in their communities, but to reuse them in a way that is relevant to now and that brings people into town centres, not just for retail.
All right. Now, we were talking about things we buy, weren't we?
Yeah, absolutely. I believe you've just spent, I think, quite frankly, a ridiculous amount of money on a pillow.
Oh, yes. Yeah, the pillow, sorry. Where would you buy a pillow? Now, I don't know where you'd buy a pillow, but I the only place I could find to sell me a pillow that I wanted was a very high-end store. There were some lower-end stores that had some pillows, and I went and spent a lot of money on a pillow. It was like over 100 quid, this goose down pillow. I do like to enjoy a good night's sleep. But truthfully, there are other places to buy things that we normally go to department stores for and that we wouldn't necessarily buy online. I wouldn't buy a pillow online. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't also buy a teapot online. So where would you buy a teapot? And we were talking about, yes, there are some high-end places, but there's also Dunelm.
There is, and I have to admit that it was a case of I had five or six different places that I might go for these kinds of things, and I just listed them off in what was closest to my home. And Dunelm was 5 minutes where I went in, and I thought, this is all right. But I think maybe what you're getting at is that in a department store previously, you would have a whole range of concessions in different departments. And now those different departments are being spread out. So although Darlington, as an example, has lost House of Fraser, a lot of the core offering that was there still is in Darlington. You still have Sports Direct, you've got Game, you've got Flannels, which again is part of the Fraser Group. But you are losing some of those smaller concessions where an SME, a small business, might have a decent bit of revenue and can start to acquire customers. So I wonder whether the disappearance of big department stores is a opportunity actually for smaller businesses, new businesses, startups.
And there are some awesome established chains like Boys, which is all over the north of England, that sells staples, not necessarily of the same price that the House of Fraser or my pillow, upmarket pillow was, but they do sell the staples. So are these opportunities for it?
Yeah, it's true. And Boys is doing well. Boys just opened in the old Wilco in Blythe in Northumberland. So it's always good when you see retailers that are closing, but then other retailers come in and be the opportunity. And of course, only in the last week or two, we saw Sephora opening in the Northeast. And what a fantastic example of how a bricks and mortar retailer is still able to generate incredible excitement and big queues of people wanting to experience and touch and feel and smell things in person.
Yes, because again, perfume is not easy to buy online if you don't know what it smells like. You have to what it smells like.
Yeah, and I think Sephora has really tapped into that whole thing of building an experience around products. And it's a great coup for the Northeast that only the fourth and fifth stores in the UK are in Newcastle and Metro Centre. That's a really good thing for our region, of course, and I'm making sure that I'm banging the drums for, you know, all these retailers that are expanding. I'm always banging the drum saying, come to Darlington, come to Sunderland, because I think lots of places in our region are attractive to lots of retailers that are expanding.
And for those also in other parts of the north, you're looking at Huddersfield, and so these provincial towns are not necessarily emptying, it's just repurposing. And Martin, what's your take on this? Because a lot of your members will be in retail, of course.
Yeah, there are. I think there's a danger of trying to make this just an economic argument. And I think the levelling up debate that happened over the last few years proves that it's about pride in your community. You know, lots of people regard the state of their town centres as being something that undermines their sense of identity. You know, if I say I come from Darlington, I don't want somebody to come there and think this place is a dump. You know, it really loads of closed shops, bookies and charity shops and all sorts. You want to feel proud about your town. Now, I think lots of small businesses there's a sort of renaissance in retail where they're stepping into the gaps left by bins. And I think that's a good thing. You know, it's the thing that worries me the most, I think, and it's a bit of a market failure, is we're getting like donut towns where there's all sorts of development on the outside of the town and hollowed out centre. Now, I think there are things government can do to try and reverse that. There are things local councils can do. They, for example, if you've got a vacant property, take it over from the landlord.
The Metro Mayors and the government is going to give them power to buy property.
Yes.
So I think that's interesting. And it's also, you talk about the donut effect, but the donut effect, Graham, possibly you think is, I don't know how to put words in your mouth, but my observation is it's also where people live. And, you know, we've got a housing shortage. I know of one, a friend of mine, actually, who bought an old premises where there was a Pizza Hut that closed down in a provincial town. He bought the premises. There's no shop yet in the basement, but he's converted the upper floors to luxury flats.
Yeah.
So getting people to live in town centres, Graham?
Well, I think plenty of people are living in town centres and more are doing so. And like I say, all these old department stores that are giving towns the chance to bring people in. And we know from the work that I do in Durham, for example, that as soon as you convert these upper floors into housing, it makes the whole place better because you've got people there in the evenings. You've got eyes looking out. It feels safer. And I think touching on those issues that we heard about a minute ago, all these things around how safe our towns are and how proud we are of them are really important. And these are some of the areas that I think the government needs to address. So, of course, business rates is one of the things that people like me are always banging on about. But also, we do have a big issue around shoplifting, around antisocial behaviour, and all those kind of issues are things that if you make town centres more attractive and more safe, you know, that is another way in which we can make them more successful as well.
Okay, now, before we go, I do want to ask Martin and to tell us a little bit about the possible employment law changes that the government is going to bring in. People in smaller businesses are anxious about this, I know, because I've talked to people. You've spoken to ministers recently. Do you feel reassured? What areas is it justified to worry and it isn't?
I feel partially reassured because I think there are some powerful members of the cabinet who are making a strong case that you have to be careful about these reforms. There is quite a lot of trade union pressure to bring in these reforms very quickly. Our view, and I think the view of most small businesses, is that would be a big mistake because essentially I think the thing that trade unions miss in this debate, because they tend to represent big multinationals and the public sector, is that small business owners, the good ones, do want to keep their staff. They do want to treat their staff fairly. But if they've got day one rights imposed on them and they make a mistake, that could jeopardise everybody's position. So our view is that there's a real danger that because of these changes, you could get a recruitment freeze. Most people would then feel like it was too dangerous to take on somebody new. Therefore, they would rather pay overtime, bring in a self-employed person, or bring in temporary staff. They won't go for the permanent member of staff, which I think then jeopardises this government's growth agenda.
I think that's an enormously good point. We've got permanent staff at our firm, and I know we know a lot of other firms that are in our field that do a lot of the freelance stuff, and most of ours are permanent, and that job security is really important.
I wonder whether you start to get towards, Martin, whether you push more into a gig economy outside of deliveries and so on, that you might have more, you know, freelance quantity surveyors, freelance PR consultants that we might get in.
I think it's a real... it's a real danger, and it's a danger that I think that, you know, the left of the Labour Party are ignoring. I really do. I mean, it strikes me that one of the things that is not talked about very much is the enforcement of these labour regulations. Now, if I'm the typical shady employer who doesn't care about how they treat their staff, they don't have any consequences. They can carry on behaving badly and they don't think they're going to be held to account. It's the honest, straightforward, good employers that could be faced with tens of thousands of pounds if they get a decision wrong and they end up in in an employment tribunal.
For me, it's not just the jeopardy as the employer in my business. It's the idea of a lot more hoops, not more laws to learn when actually I want to be plying my trade. I only employ 12 people. I don't feel I need an interlocutor between me and 12 people.
No, you don't.
And I don't feel that that I need to find that there are more hoops to go through because it's a small business. And you're representing people like me, whether they're in retail or services or what have you.
Your comments are very typical of virtually everybody in our membership, right? We don't have big HR departments. We don't have even HR managers in many cases, right? What the owners are trying to do is navigate this, which is a difficult situation to manage. They're trying to navigate it, and yet the government's trying to make it more complicated.
Right. Well, I'm glad that they've got your ear, and thank you for representing it. Graham, I don't suppose that this issue is something you'd generally touch on. Does it affect your specialty retail?
I'll have to admit, it's not something I really get into. I'm more the high street guy. Well, I'll leave Martin to talk about the
employee. Yeah, he's certainly doing a good job. Well, that's us for this week. Now, next week, just to remind people, you're going to be...
We're heading off, Jamie and I, who I think has previously hosted this. We've done a couple of special episodes. We're heading off to an NOF event, which is a membership group for people working in the energy industry. I think that's next Tuesday. We're going to be interviewing people there, finding out what's going on in the industry, finding out what they think about these employment rights and so on that Labour are set to announce. And it should be a brilliant episode. If anyone's coming along, come find us. You won't be able to miss us. We'll be there with the cameras and microphones. I'm looking forward to it.
And you'll be able to see that on these channels or listen to it on the podcast channels that we're on. And don't forget to like and subscribe. If you want to join us as a guest on the Northern Business Podcast, get in touch. It's best to get in touch with me, Graham Robb, on LinkedIn, or look out for Recognition PR. Thanks to our producer, Harry Sinclair, and our technical operator, Robin Campbell. Join us next time. Don't miss an episode. Like, rate, and subscribe on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts.